Shalom, everyone. The Shas and United Torah Judaism political parties within the coalition government of Benjamin Netanyahu have resigned their office and positions and are no longer supporting the coalition government, which brings the coalition government into question with only 50 votes. Israel has struck the Syrian army in southern Syria, driving them back to protect the Druze villages in southern Syria. And yes, the Gaza ceasefire hostage deal is still on the table, still being negotiated with Hamas. Messianic World Update begins now. Shalom, everyone. I'm Monty Judah with Lion and Lamb Ministries. Welcome to another edition of Messianic World Update. Today's date is Friday, July 18th of the year 2025. The Israeli Knesset has not been able to pass a draft exemption bill for the Haredi students, keeping them from serving in the IDF for 2 years, 18 to 20 years of age. Netanyahu has tried to support the two religious parties, Shas and United Torah Judaism, who want that bill, but there's a member of Knesset, his name is Edelson, he's been able successfully to block it. And the vast majority of the Israeli citizens would like to see the Haredi have to serve in the military just like all the rest of their sons and daughters have to serve as well. As a result of this, the Shas and United Torah Judaism Party have threatened to leave the government, and in fact they've made the announcement this week they are in fact leaving the government. They resigned from their offices and their positions. Now, it didn't immediately cause a collapse of the government. They're waiting until about July 27th, which will be end of the session, and then maybe there may be a no-confidence vote at that time. Here's a report from France 24 News about the whole situation there in Israel.
Is it the beginning of the end for Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu? Monday evening, two ultra-Orthodox parties of the United Torah Judaism movement announced they were quitting his government and his coalition. At the heart of the fracture, mandatory military service. Since 1948, members of the ultra-Orthodox community have been exempted from enlisting as long as they dedicated themselves full-time to religious studies. An unwritten arrangement, which the UTJ has demanded be set in stone via law. However, with Israel's war on Gaza still raging on, the army needs manpower. In June 2024, the Supreme Court ruled that this decades-old practice was no longer valid, and the judicial authorities and the army have recently begun to take action against those who are now considered deserters.
They want to recruit us into the army and destroy us. Thank God we welcome the decision of our representatives in the Knesset, for they have returned to us. They made the best decision they could have made, and I hope the State of Israel fails.
There's no way the two sides will ever meet. They've been trying for 80 years and it didn't work. This is the moment of truth, zero hour, and God help us that it won't pass without bloodshed.
The issue of mandatory military service has long since divided Israeli Jews. Ultra-Orthodox refusal to serve has only widened the rift. Among the political parties representing the religious group are seven deputies from Unified Torah Judaism, a key governing partner for the prime minister, which helped him secure a comfortable 68-seat majority out of the 120 available in the Knesset. While UTJ's departure does not immediately threaten Netanyahu's rule, Shas, the other Orthodox party with 11 representatives in parliament, now controls the coalition's destiny.
At the moment, the Netanyahu coalition parties used to hold 68 of the 120 seats, a very clear majority. However, as a result of the two religious parties dropping back and not supporting the vote, the new majority is now dropping to 50, so it is not a majority anymore. As I said, the Shas party and the United Torah Judaism, they've dropped their offices and portfolios they had in the government. Netanyahu is filling those offices with different people. And we're holding on until July 27 when there may be a no-confidence vote that will come forward. That's going to cause Israel to go into new elections. And honestly, I think Netanyahu's okay with that because at the moment Netanyahu and the Likud party, his particular political party, feels very good about new elections. They think they could win even more seats and even have a stronger political party, maybe one without the religious parties. These are things that we're going to be watching for very closely. Up in Syria, southern Syria in particular, the Israeli IDF went into action and attacked the Syrian army in southern Lebanon. They were coming down to attack Druze villages that were in southern Syria, and Israel came to the defense of those Druze villages, attacking tanks, hitting a major building, which was the defense ministry in Damascus. And here is a video from 7 Australia News that shows the destruction of that facility.
Israel striking its neighbor again. Since the fall of the Assad regime, the Israelis have carried out around 300 bombings. The latest attack on Damascus is Syria and Israel are currently involved in peace talks, brokered by a Trump administration perhaps confused by this turn of events.
I think I'll ask Marco to say a few words on Syria.
Yeah, it's complicated, obviously. These are historic, long-time rivalries between different groups in the southwest of Syria, Bedouins, the Druze community, and it led to an unfortunate situation and a misunderstanding, it looks like, between the Israeli side and the Syrian side. So we've been engaged with them all morning long and all night long with both sides, and we think we're on our way towards a real de-escalation and then hopefully get back on track.
At the center of the strife, an Arab minority sect known as the Druze, whose communities straddle the Israeli-Syrian border. Crucially, those living in Israel enjoy government support because they serve in the IDF. In recent days, the Syrian Druze have been fighting Syrian government forces who they don't trust.
We are calling all the world to help us and to call this the government, if we can call this a government, to stop those terrorist attacks on our people.
The Israelis have become involved militarily to both support the Druze and to ensure Syrian troops don't get too close to the border. They're not sure about the intentions of the new Islamist administration in Damascus. The Israeli Prime Minister has made a statement. We are acting to save our Druze brothers and to eliminate the gangs of the regime, he said. Under the guise of protecting these sects, Israel is using both negotiations and bombs to influence the direction taken by the new Syria.
Once that was done, the Syrian army decided to completely withdraw from southern Syria. And so right now, Israel is declaring a no-combat zone, a demilitarized zone, if you will, from southern Damascus all the way down to the border with Israel. No Syrian army in that area. This is to protect those Druze villages that are taking place in there. It's a little bit interesting who the Druze people are, because there's villages, Druze villages in northern Israel as well as in southern Syria. These are an interesting group of people. They believe they're descendants of Jethro, if you remember, the father-in-law to Moses. They do hold to the Ten Commandments, but they have some interesting ideas on how the Messiah is supposed to show up. I won't go into all the detail with regard to that, but they are held in high regard and high esteem in Israel. They're considered to be brothers of my brothers. And so they're not combatants and they're not considered to be a threat to Israel whatsoever. Israel wants them to remain there, be safe there, because it serves as a buffer for Israel to protect Israel as well. There's still conflict in Syria. Bedouin tribes are still hassling with others. And as you can imagine, they're still sorting out who's going to be in charge of what there in Syria. Some of the Syrian army has gone up into the Alawite areas in the mountains. More conflict, and they're hoping that that will all calm down. At least the United States is working toward bringing it to calm down, and Israel would love to see Syria go into a peaceful state themselves as well. Back at Gaza and the ceasefire negotiations with Hamas trying to get the hostages released, several proposals have gone forward. Hamas is very intransigent about this. The latest proposal is to release 10 live and 18 dead over a period of a ceasefire of 60 days. The hope is that during those same 60 days, we can negotiate for a final agreement, an end of the war, release of all the hostages, and so forth for it. Now, Hamas was objecting and saying they wouldn't agree to that because they wanted Israel to withdraw their forces back to a certain area in Gaza. The latest word is Israel has decided to cooperate with that to a certain extent, and so there's hope that that agreement will come together. And we keep hearing announcements that the agreement could be any time. Here's Secretary of State Marco Rubio making comments about the negotiations.
And I spoke to Steve Witkoff last night, and he's optimistic that proximity talks will begin fairly soon, expedited and facilitated by the Qataris and the Egyptians. And so, but we've seen talks fall apart in the past at that stage of proximity talks. So I think we're closer, and I think perhaps, we're closer than we've been in quite a while, and we're hopeful. But we also recognize there are still some challenges in the way. And, you know, one of the fundamental challenges is Hamas's unwillingness to disarm, which would end this conflict immediately. If they just release the hostages, there shouldn't be a single hostage. There shouldn't be a single hostage body still left. If they release that and disarm, this would end. But that said, the Israelis have shown some flexibility here. And so I think we've seen progress made. So we're hopeful, but we also understand that these things have been difficult for a reason. But we're hopeful that they can move to proximity talks pretty quickly and go from there and have a ceasefire in place in the near future. I think the easiest way to end this, that's not what the agreement is, but the easiest way to end this is for all the hostages to be released and for Hamas to disarm. You know, absent that, the Israelis and Hamas through the mediation of Qatar and Egypt have reached an understanding on a 60-day ceasefire and some elements of that with regards to humanitarian aid through international agencies resuming and so forth. But now you've got to have talks about how do you implement that. And that's where this has fallen apart in the past. We're hopeful that'll work out. We're doing everything we can.
The IDF clearly controls about 75% of Gaza, 100% of Rafah, the city there. And Chris Mitchell of the CBN Jerusalem chief reported in the state of the IDF over Gaza. Let's hear what he has to say about the status in Gaza.
And this is all part of Gideon's chariots that we have talked about, Ephraim, many times. Right now, I've heard estimates as far low as 62%, as high as 80% that Israel controls in the Gaza Strip. They want to make as many gains as they can to make sure that when there is a potential ceasefire, that they're going to control most of the land they can. They're also doing something and proposing something that may be a game changer as well. They're talking about a humanitarian city down in southern Gaza. Now, what this would do, and may include as many as 600,000 Gazans, would actually really undermine the ability of Hamas to control the population, and that would really accelerate the goal of Israel to make sure that Hamas can never once again control and govern the Gaza Strip, as well as defeating Hamas militarily. And we'll see about the ceasefire. We still keep hearing about reports, but Hamas still seems to be intransigent, wanting a permanent end to the war and the withdrawal of IDF forces, which Israel is unwilling to agree to.
Clearly, Hamas has lost complete control, and they're starting to kill their own Palestinian citizens. This makes it extremely difficult in pulling together enough authoritative sources within Hamas to release hostages, to know where the hostages are at, and to be able to complete an agreement with them. In the meantime, Israel is still continuing to carry out operations in Gaza, rooting out where these Hamas operatives are at, if they see them hold up in a building, to bomb the building. And as a result, there's a lot of casualties going on that are not necessarily Hamas. And Israel is trying to be very careful, but this last week saw some casualties that were not intended by Israel that struck. There was, in fact, a church that was struck, and Israel has apologized for that. This is the problem with trying to get those last elements of the Hamas out of Gaza. There's also other stories that are now coming about settler violence against Palestinians. We're talking about Judea and Samaria. These are Israeli settlers that are going against Palestinians. Now, the news stories are all one-sided. They're all talking about what have the settlers done with the Palestinians, but you don't hear any of the stories explaining what the Palestinians have been doing to the settlers. And as a result, it's kind of a one-sided story. Foreign press have been trying to go in and get the story, and because of the way they've been used by the Palestinians, the settlers don't want them in there either. They see the foreign press is siding with the Palestinians, and in fact, this last week, some CNN folks were attacked by the settlers as well, told to leave and to get back. There's several buildings being built in the Judea and Samaria areas by Israel. The subject of annexation of Judea and Samaria is becoming a front burner topic. This is an election pledge made by Likud. And just recently in Machpelah down in Hebron, this is the tomb of the patriarchs where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are buried with their wives. The Palestinians have turned that over to the Israelis to let them take care of it. That's a major shift on the part of the Palestinians. And in fact, the report is the Palestinians in the Hebron area no longer want to be in conflict with Israel. They just like to get on with their lives and cooperate and so forth there. There's also other reports about Joseph's tomb up in Samaria, about efforts underway there to make that more accessible for the Israelis to be able to go and visit. There's just all sorts of elements now showing us that maybe the spirit of Hamas and the violent part of the Palestinians is subsiding. And the remaining Palestinians that are there in the land of Israel would like to have peace with the Israeli government. We hope for that to take place. We hope the trend is going to continue with Israel being able to exercise sovereignty over all of the land of Israel, including East Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount. That is part of the prophetic scenario, and we're paying very close attention to every step in this direction. And at the moment, there's some very serious steps taking place that are leading to that. I'm going to ask you to continue to pray for Israel, particularly for the prophetic scenario to see if Israel can exercise sovereignty over its land, and in particular, the Temple Mount. We'd love to have you like, subscribe, and comment on our YouTube channel. Subscribe to lionandlamb.tv. That's our subscription service with all of our programs, and we have a premier service for you on that. All of our weekly programs are available on podcast. You can listen to them wherever you go. You can get a free subscription to our Yavo magazine, which has timely articles, written articles about in the faith. Follow us on all of the social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Telegram, X, and whatever else they come up with. We're going to be on it. But in particular, I want to issue a personal invitation. I want you to pray seriously about in October coming out and joining Lion of Lamb Ministries here in Oklahoma for the Feast of Tabernacles, to join with like-minded brethren as we observe the Feast of Sukkot, come out and hear excellent teachers, musicians, and worship, and we're going to come and spend 8 days worshiping the Lord. Go to tabernaclesevent.com to be able to register for that. I'd love to have you come out, love to see you then. Shabbat Shalom to all of you.